Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock's recap of the United States Disc Golf Championship. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. Very exciting week out there. We were on the grounds, if you weren't paying attention. We just got back about 2 hours ago,
Connor wasn't on last episode, too. We need to say something, because he was sick, I think, last week.
Was he sick last
week?
Our equipment's in Brad's truck, so Connor's here. Connor, yell over here. Let him know.
Oh.
Oh. I'm here, everyone, and I had a great time at USDGC.
So make sure people didn't start drawing their own conclusions.
But our board is in Brad's truck,
they got
and
bored
Brad
and
is at home. And so we had to, the only other option we have has only two mic inputs.
Boom.
So here we are.
Handy recorder.
Anywho, we're going to go over the United States Disc Golf Championship, talk about all of the different storylines from that, explain to you a little bit about what it's like being on the grounds, do a Trevor's Trivia, and then wrap up our power rankings post this major. Again, there's only one more event left in the season, the Tour Championship, that can affect all of this. So very interesting. Very fun week. But first, quick word from our sponsor. We're brought to you today by Manscaped, who has really stepped their game up to bring you your face the cleanest shave it's ever seen. So this season, there's no need to toil and trouble. Manscaped's all-new Handyman is the best way to get rid of that stubble. Featuring a compact design and next-gen skin-safe technology, the Handyman was designed to give you that smooth finish without the mess of a traditional shave. So get the sweetest treat this Halloween by going to manscaped.com and using the code GRIPLOCKED for 20% off plus free shipping. Are you tired of bad razor making your neck look like a scary movie?
Yes.
Well, with the Handyman Skin Safe technology to help reduce nicks and cuts, you can finally feel confident when going out with that close shave. For wet or dry use, you can feel free to bring this thing anywhere and everywhere. The compact design and airplane friendliness makes this thing the perfect travel tool for on the go. And being able to shave up to 3 days growth without the mess of a wet shave is priceless. And for my wolfmen out there with a little more scruff, Manscaped's Beard Hedger Pro Kit has everything you need to tame your mane. This cordless trimmer features a rotary wheel that gives you 20 hair cutting links with one guard. So no more drawers full of extra add-ons collecting cobwebs. So don't forget to go over to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with the code GRIPLOCKED. Again, that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using code GRIPLOCKED. So let's get straight into, we'll start USDGC. We're just going to talk USDGC and Throw Pink kind of all at once.
Yes.
Talk about them as one event.
Yes.
Obviously, they go on separately. I heard the commentary team kind of like was having somewhat of a hard time wrapping their mind around like major A tier going on at the same time. And
yeah,
makes sense.
Yes.
I witnessed it because obviously we were on the ground, so we didn't get to hear the commentary. I heard that Zoe Andyke talked a lot, didn't let Juliana Korver get many words in. I also heard that Ken Climo, people are already calling the GOAT of commentary. So
I can see that.
People really like
Climo. I did see people a little annoyed that they only called him the champ, apparently, just every time.
They only call Tiger.
Wow. Say less. Checkmate.
Anyways. I forget where I was going with it, but we can't really talk about commentary is what I was gonna say. I had a point I was about to make. Doesn't matter. Throw Pink went
in with it.
Almost there. Come back to me. The only time I got to experience the commentary was if you got food and sat under one of the tents, they had the Roku playing DGN and you could hear it.
Sure did.
And I did hear, here it is, Zoe Andyke said, it came back. Zoe Andyke was talking about how she said, from what she understands, basically all the spectators and all the players, everyone she talks to wants this to be the major over U.S.
Yeah.
Women's. So it makes sense. It's not just us floating out on our own.
Hey, PDGA, CC, am I right?
Yeah, he's right. Hit him with it.
CC, the PDGA.
But Throw Pink Women's, very exciting. Holland Hanley won in a two-hole playoff over Chris and Tatar, who came in second. And
great.
Then you had Henna and Evelina tied for third. USDGC, we'll go over just the top three super quick before we get into storylines. Kyle Klein was able to take it down over Bradley Williams, and you had Isaac Robinson and Simon Lazat tied for third. But let's go back to Throw Pink Women's. Holland Hanley shot an incredible 10 under to come back from Chase Card and force the playoff with Kristen. From what I understand, she is the first player ever on this property at the USDGC to come back from Chase Card, is what Statmando posted.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, that final round.
There.
Yeah, that final round was crazy.
Yeah, 10 under, absolutely wild final round. Now, you might have heard about this. There was a lot of controversy about hole 18. So I want to talk about hole 18. I was on the grounds, but from where I was at, I don't have any extra context. I actually had to go back and watch the footage to understand a bit more, but I can provide context as someone who's been there, and I think I understand how this might have happened a little bit more than some people who are sitting at home. But basically what happened was, clear as day, the drive did not cross over the inbounds area, but she got the spot as if it did. When I first heard about this, again, I didn't have a good idea as to like the spot of where it should have been or anything like that from where I was watching, because I was trying to get 18 kind of sucks as a viewing hole.
Awful.
And awful. I was trying to get to where I could see the whole play out for her and then the whole play out for Kristen. So I was a lot more close to the green, because in my head, the drives typically get up the hill a little bit and I could see where the normal drive would land, and then you can see if it rolls OB. That's all I was trying to watch for. So I had no idea what happened on this shot. After watching it on coverage, pretty clear as day, she basically was trying to throw a forehand to make sure she was safe. She just threw it dead straight at this tree. It crossed over land, but the OB line seemed like it was off the land a little bit. And so it was a lot closer than I had read Facebook comments first and then watched it. Way closer than Facebook comments made it seem. And then it hit this tree on top of all that. Hits a tree clearly on land and just never makes it inbounds. So from the camera angle, clear as day, never inbounds. I don't think that's an argument someone can make. Holland, you know, from her point of view, it should have been pretty clear that she never crossed in, but in the heat of the moment, who knows? People were coming after, obviously, her other three card mates. It's their responsibility to be like, hey, you got to re-tee it, never crossed in.
Yeah.
The context that I think is very important here is the camera angle was basically like behind Holland, maybe a little left of Holland on the tee. And on 18, you're teeing on this dock that's out at least 10, 15 feet into the water. So you had to walk out there to get there. Cameraman standing on that. That's the angle we have. The card mates all are under a tent on the land, probably at least 25 if they're standing. Sometimes you can be up to 40 feet right of Holland. So the angle that they had on this disc would have been completely different than the angle Holland and the camera, and so therefore us, had on this disc. I don't think it's a stretch at all because of how close that disc came for the card mates to think that very easily could have crossed in bounds.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, you know, and as much as like nobody really wants to hear this, if you're a card mate who's also like trying to think through things and in the heat of the moment, you might just not have even been looking. Like if like sometimes a shot happens in disc golf and you're watching it, but you're not really thinking about it. And like when it comes to OB rules, because from what I heard, Holland just kind of walked up, like placed her mini down, and they just kind of like and just kind of went right away. There was no like talking about it or anything. And it's very possible that just nobody even thought about it because you don't really think about, like, you saw it hit over land, so you were probably just weren't even, and it wasn't even crossing your mind necessarily that it might not have ever crossed inbounds. But I mean, yeah, the video evidence is there. It is kind of a tough one where it's like, yes, that would have majorly affected the outcome of the tournament. Had she had to re-tee, I mean, that is like potentially you lose it right there. But it's a we'll never know. And yeah, you definitely, I agree with you. You can't just go ahead and right away and point fingers at anybody because A, even Holland herself might, I'm sure, was not intentionally doing it.
When I was watching the disc mid-flight, I literally had to like look for the OB shot, OB line.
Right.
If you're just watching the disc, all you know is I threw it straight, it hit that tree.
Yeah.
It's not, when it was described to me originally, I thought she swung it out over the water and it hit the tree coming in from the water.
Yeah, it was tight.
And just never got back. It was very close to the OB line. It's clear as day if you're watching it now thinking, is this going to be in bounds? But when you're thinking, get in bounds, get in bounds, get in bounds, and like try to get safe and it lands OB, I don't think it's nearly as criminal as people are making it out to be. It is unfortunate because, yes, that is possibly a stroke because realistically Holland could have got somewhere to where she could have got up and down. It would have been the same score. But she would have had a much tougher shot having to re-tee. So, yes, at least half a stroke was cost there. But in the heat of the moment, I saw a lot of people, too, asking for camera replays. They're like, this is why it's got to happen.
Yeah, I don't think we want to depend
disagree
on
with
that. Yeah.
Because here's my thing, right, is this happened chase card FPO. In this situation, you'll always have live cameras on Chase Card FPO. I don't know if there's post-production cameras on Chase Card FPO. These live cameras aren't recording.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to get, first off, an instant replay?
Yeah.
You'd have to go to the booth and have the booth make a call.
We do not need to involve tech any more than it is.
Secondly, on top of that, it is now an unfair advantage to every other card,
right?
Especially in the first few days. Right. Because if in, like, let's say they did it. I don't know if they have camera replays in golf or not. But if they did, the big thing here is golf has every shot's been
recorded.
I don't
believe you're allowed to use video evidence in golf. I don't believe so.
But if you were, I would understand it a little bit more because I've been to a PGA Tour event. they had cameras on every hole.
Yeah.
They weren't having one camera guy walk with the lead card. They had some for like B-roll shots, but they have towers filming every hole. Right. So there's a solid chance every golf shot hit on that course was actually recorded.
Right.
So then that's a whole different situation. We're not even close to that yet.
No.
You're seeing two cards, maybe sometimes a person on the third card have a camera follow them. So if I'm on the fourth card, I instantly have a huge advantage because you can't use camera replay. Now, that could be a disadvantage in some moments like this, but it was an advantage to Holland. So I am completely against camera replays because in this one instance, it could have solved a problem. But how do we know this didn't happen to Ella Hansen when she was on a non-filmed card? You know what I mean? And a similar thing happened to get her into this position, and we just have no idea that it happened.
Well, and like the thing is, if one of the, like, I don't believe there was any intentionality with any of the players. I think if like had one of the players other than Holland seen it, I'm sure they would have said something. I wish that there was a marshal or a spotter that could have like brought it to attention, because it may have just been one of those things where nobody was even thinking. Like, I think we've all had those moments like in disc golf where you would throw a shot like that, walk up to where your disc kind of like ended up OB, and sometimes you're, and somebody would say like, oh, you never crossed in, and you're like, oh, you're right, I didn't. Like, you, sometimes it just does, you don't even think about it, because you, like Holland Hanley in that moment is thinking, my shot is out of bounds, I need to do this. She's not even thinking about where her shot maybe went out of bounds. Like, that just might not have crossed her mind. I'm not going to say she's completely innocent because I can't read her mind, but I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. I wish somebody had been there, like a spotter, be like, hey guys, by the way, I don't, from my view, that didn't look to cross back in bounds. What did you see from the tee? So they could all be like, oh, I guess you're right. Yeah, that hit this tree. It didn't. That's the shame, is like nobody even brought it up. There were so many people there. Like,
well, I think because there were marshals walking with the car.
Right.
Robert Leonard was out there. Yeah. There's several PDJ people.
I just want to get everybody's statement.
They were all with the card.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion is, I think the only way you knew without a shadow of a doubt that didn't cross is if you were standing where this cameraman was.
I just want to know if it entered discussion. I just want to know if it entered discussion at all. Like, if they,
well,
if somebody said
something that was like, she might have mentioned it to the card while she's walking up, like, my spot's up here, right? And everyone's like, yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'd love to hear everybody kind of talk about, like,
because the spotter is up on top of the hill close to where I was at.
Yeah.
To where he, I mean, pretty much all he did is went down and flagged, hey, it's OB.
Right.
He didn't have a good angle either, really, in my opinion.
Well, yeah,
and the spotter's not an official.
When you're looking across at it, I mean, you're never going to be able
to
see
the depth of it. I think the 18th group tee is just a unique spot because of how far separated you are from the group, because it literally is a sign, only one player on the tee at a time. Like, it's a sign that you're not supposed to have multiple people up there.
Right.
So people couldn't stand and watch the angle we watched.
Yeah, kind of weird.
People were way over here, and from that angle, it's not a stretch to think that this crossed and bounced, in my opinion. I think that's more where it's from. But with all of this, a big story that's being skipped right now is the fact that Kristen Tatar laid up her circle two putt on 17 before all of this went down.
Yeah.
So Kristen's in a position in her head, if Holland Hanley pars 18, it's over for Kristen. It's a par five for FPO.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen's on the green of 17, safe, has a birdie putt from, I filmed it, it's from like probably close to 60 feet.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very capable putter. She knows where she's at all times. She knows what this putt means. She could have put the pressure on Holland of like, hey, par ties me, birdie beats me.
Right.
Instead, she laid it up.
Very weird.
Because if she runs that putt, this isn't even a discussion. Holland goes OB. She can't get up and down for birdie. It's over.
Yeah.
But instead, she laid it up, tapped out her par, and put it in a position that this even mattered.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there was like confusion as to what was going on. It just doesn't. It seems very off-brand. I mean, she had made,
I think she was scared of the OB behind.
Well, and hey, to be fair, those baskets are very close, and a lot of players, you know, it might have just been a situation where she was thinking about the percentages. Okay, there's a little bit of a breeze. This is a long putt. This percentage make is very low, whereas 18. But she had never, literally, as they're teeing off on 18, I did hear this commentary. They said she had never birdied it ever in her career. So that is an interesting one, like, to be like, all right, let's put all the marbles on the hole. I've never ever birdied and not run this putt on 17. But I think that must have been the logic. But
I'm gonna pull the putt up again.
Listen, there's something to be said about the fact that the last two MPO champions had to make basically 60 footers on 17 to win that tournament, and now Kristen lays one up and doesn't win.
Yeah, because I had my phone out.
I think that's winning time. I think you have to run that
putt.
It
was probably 65, but where she was at, the angle, she had more green to work with behind. She was more right than deep.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's a, I'm taking this turn into my own hands. I have to make that putt.
It's very weird because I feel like she is typically, you know, in the right moments is aggressive. I mean, she made a really awesome putt. I believe it was on 14 where it was like 38 feet down the hill.
Yeah.
So like there was,
there's something going on where she wasn't feeling,
she
that
just did not like that putt. Yeah, yeah. Which, hey, in fairness, it was enough to get her to the playoffs.
Yeah, she got to the playoff. She did what she had to do. The big thing that hurt Kristen overall this weekend, though, funny enough, only putted 69% in C1X.
Yeah.
Normally we see her closer to that 80%, 85% mark. That alone would have won it for her.
Yeah.
69% is decent in FPO, not if you're trying to win.
Yeah.
And so I think that hurt her. And speaking of putting, Hannah and Evelina should have won this weekend.
Oh my gosh.
They did everything they had to do except for put the disc in the darn basket. I have all rounds pulled up here. Gained tee to green. I believe, I won't be shocked. Yeah, they led the field. Evelina Solonen, 22.95 strokes gained tee to green. Henna Blomroos, 20.75 strokes gained tee to green. So they gained both of them between 5 and 6 strokes on Holland Hanley tee to green. But Evelina was negative 6.18 gained putting to Holland Hanley's positive 6.8. So there's 12 strokes there. And Henna Blomroos was negative 5 to Holland Hanley's 6.8. So there's 11 strokes there, and they lost by 2.
Yeah. It's just, and like, I don't need to put the they can't win curse on anybody else, especially in FPO. Like, I feel like they could win, but, you know, the early in that tournament, both of them were like building leads, playing really well. And I was kind of like, yeah, but it's just not going to last because they just can't putt and you cannot win disc golf.
Well, this is the crazy thing is they lost by 2 strokes and they both putted, one putted 56%, one putted 58% from C1X. And Henna putted 4% and Evelina putted 0% from C2.
Yeah.
Whereas Holland Hanley putted 83% C1X and 14% C2.
It just shows how
insane
they throw that course. Like, they are so good at throwing the disc. It must be just a torturous way to, like, play disc golf, knowing that if you could just figure out how to get the disc in the basket from 30 feet and in, you would be probably the best player in the world.
Well, yeah, because the big story of their putting, because their putting overall wasn't awful. Like, if you look at it, like round 4, for instance, they putted 67 and 75% C1X. Round 1, when they opened the tournament, they putted 75 and 79%. The problem was round 2, they putted 42 and 38%. And then round 3, they putted 29 and 20%. And those are the two rounds that did it.
One out of 5 from C1X is just not going to do it.
No, never.
Cannot do it.
Yeah, so because in every other aspect, pretty much, they won this event. It's just putting. And we've seen that before, but I got to witness it firsthand.
Yep.
But huge congrats to Holland Hanley. It's unfortunate this is just an A tier because it feels like so much more, but
there,
all the players treat it like so much more. It's a majors going on, so you have probably the biggest gallery other than maybe the European Open that the players play in front of all year. The lead card FPO gallery that final day was massive.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Honestly, it was rivaling because the lead card final day MPO card was kind of boring, the player-wise on it. There might have been a bigger lead card FPO gallery than lead card MPO gallery.
Well, because everybody there was on that one card, whereas for MPO, it was like
it was
three
very spread
cards
out.
Spread out.
Yeah. There's more players there for the, like, when you got to 17, 18, there was more spectators watching MPO. But I'm saying the entire round, I was walking with Kristen's card, and then I'd pop over and watch Holland some. And as Holland was getting her hot round going more and more, there was more players or more spectators kind of gathering to her car, but people were out there to watch Kristen.
The roars
and
were,
it was electric.
The roars were awesome. At one point, I was at the foundation tent and we were watching Kristen come in, and it would be like on 14, we saw where her drive landed, and then I'd be like, obviously there's a little delay with the stream, and I'd tell her, like, all right, well, we're going to hear a roar if she makes this. We'd hear the roar and then we'd watch and she had made it, and that's awesome. Cause like that was, you know, a ways away from where we were, and on the playoff it was very exciting to hear how loud it got too. I will say it was crazy on the playoff. They started on hole one, which, first of all, why they decided to play hole one as the first playoff hole, I have no idea. But
they used to, back in the day, go 18-1-17. Yeah. Now they go 1-17-18.
I don't know. I really think they should just keep playing 17 because I like that you can view it from there or across the lake, but whatever. They on hole one, they both ended up having like 40 footers or whatever, but Kristen goes forehand on hole one, and I get that she just wants to hit the gap, but you're never going to get closer to that shot really because it's going to skip down the hill. But she skipped right into a tree that was like 5 feet from the basket, and I thought it was game, set, match, and then it picked up and rolled.
Well, it rolled towards the basket for a second.
Yeah, and then it turned.
The claps got louder, and then it turned, and from the hillside where we were watching it, you couldn't see it. You just saw it roll, and so people were still cheering, and then you see it on the other side,
it just got quiet.
Someone in the gallery just goes, it's still rolling,
yeah,
and then it just got dead quiet.
But
what was weird is
that thing stopped. It was over.
My opinion, didn't end up mattering. Kristen was definitely out on those final putts.
Yeah,
It did not.
It was
Holland
weird. Yeah.
Seemed like she was much closer than Kristen.
Yeah.
There was like an all-time jinx moment that luckily didn't happen. It was one of the like workers for the event, but Holland putted, missed. Kristen putted. Missed. Yeah. Holland had like a 15-footer. The whole gallery starts moving towards 17. And one of the like crowd control people were like, where are you going, people? It's not over yet.
Oh,
and I was
gosh,
like,
dude.
If Holland misses this, man, like...
That is like the worst. That must be like the worst feeling. Of all the putting scenarios you could put me in, I think the hardest one to make a putt would be the gallery is a huge gallery moving to the next hole because they think you're going to go there. And like you just missing. It's like in doubles when your doubles partner is 100 feet down towards the next tee and you miss. You're like, I'm going to come back.
Yeah.
It's over.
She didn't matter. She made it and then
clutched
Holland
up on 17.
Put it on the green on 17.
She was like C1. She like circles edge.
Yeah. End up not mattering because Kristen tried getting more aggressive because
over,
Kristen
yeah.
was playing. She had to be closer than Holland. Realistically, yeah. in her head. And so she got a little too aggressive and threw it OB in the water, and then Holland got to just lay up and tap out. And
how was that?
It was pretty awesome.
That final round was just insane.
Pretty wild because MPO was teeing off.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the gallery, they like paused MPO tee off for this playoff to start happening, and they couldn't get full control of the gallery because like people fill into that hill on 17, and with everyone trying to watch the playoff on 17, then yeah. hole one's fairway just got kind of got engulfed.
Yeah, blocked out.
And so after they threw their drives, Robert Leonard from the PGA like made an announcement to the crowd. He's like, it's the second that, because Kristen had already thrown OB. He's like, the second Holland taps out, I need everyone off this fairway. Like the second it taps out, clap, cheer, and you're gone. We're out of here because we got to get players moving again. And so she tapped out. And then, like, it was loud, thunderous applause. They gave her the trophy. She raised it. And then all the officials start going, off the fairway. Let's go up the hill.
Are we
going to
talk about the trophy match situation? Have you seen the pictures?
I did see. It doesn't match that close.
I saw a picture that it was like, you might as well have not even seen the trophy.
What are you talking?
It was so blended. Okay, maybe I need to see a bigger one. But the one I saw on Twitter, I was like, I mean, obviously I don't believe in, like, any conspiracy about it. But I thought it was really funny. That it was like so close.
I heard someone talk about it, and then I saw the picture, and I was like, "What are people talking about? This doesn't that picture." Okay, that
that's
picture
what
matches.
I saw.
The one I saw, she's raising it.
No, I mean,
and like, look, when it's separated out, it doesn't look like it matches.
No, it's the same colors, but
yeah, but the pattern.
But yeah, this one,
one
it literally looked like it was
like
part of her shirt.
The pattern blends in. This is the one I saw where she's raising it.
Yeah,
and I was like, "What are you?" Because like, even there, it doesn't look like the same colors.
Yeah.
So I was like, what are people talking about? That one's crazy. Yeah. That one looks like the shirt just fuses into the trophy.
I was like, what in the world is going on?
Also, trophy game, they do it right here. So the trophy that you see raised, there's that glass thing.
They're fine.
Cool, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But then there's the huge trophy that they raise, typically like before the throw across the water moment, where it has all the previous winner's name
on it. I don't know
why
they don't bring that one out
and
first.
And then the next year, they'll get their ring ceremony right. happens at the players' party.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, into MPO. Score here does not tell the full story. Kyle Klein only won by one, but he lost four strokes in the final hole, taking a 7 to Bradley Williams' birdie.
Yeah.
Interesting thing, the only stat he led the field on here in the tournament was park percentage.
Mm-hmm.
He was behind on everyone else. He just played solid all weekend. Yeah. And
well, a lot of his throwing percentage were up there.
Always felt like he was going to win. Like we talked about in the preview show every day, because you would look at his round and he would fire off like a 9-under. And it just felt like he only putted like 70% C1X, for instance.
He
one
left
day.
Some out on the table each day.
Every day he just left on the table and he was riding attention. Whereas like Joel Freeman shredded the back nine the first day. And then like there was multiple times where it felt like Joel was pushing the boundary. And you're like, you're looking at his scorecard like, I don't know how much more he has in it.
Right.
Whereas Kyle Klein, you're like, he's got so many strokes
shot
out
even
there.
More, yeah.
Yeah. So it always felt to me like he was going to it felt almost like a Kristen win, where he just kind of did his game, stayed in contention, didn't really blow up, just kind of did his thing and let everyone else kind of fall around him.
Right.
And that ended up what led to a one-stroke victory, his first ever major.
Yep.
What was interesting was I saw another stat that this was, I think, the first time ever that the entire lead and chase card had a combined zero majors.
Oh, wow.
Going into that final round.
Wow, that is crazy. This would be the major for that to happen, obviously. Yeah.
So it was first time ever at USDGC, maybe, because obviously the first major ever would have had zero on both.
Yeah, there you go.
But, yeah, he has kept staying in contention without ever seeing like put it all together, and just eventually it worked out. Very solid play from him. He's been close before, so it was good for him to get the win here. He felt like a deserving champ for sure.
It was... he did pretty much what I thought was the impossible, which was holding that lead on the final day. I was like, surely he's not going to come out and just make a ton of birdies and like pull away. Like, that's usually so difficult to do at that course, and that's exactly what he did. I mean, he just, at one point, what was the lead? 9?
It got up there.
Like, he just extended the lead early in that round, just basically stomped on everybody else's chances, and that was
well, that was
crazy.
We talked about it in the preview show before the final round, and I said what he had to do was come out the gates hot, because he plays the back, he did not play the back historically good, and so he had to make people feel like they were out of it, because I felt like if you gave players a glimmer of hope, they could come chase him down.
He shut the door pretty
quick.
And
that's what he did. He shut the door quick, but after hole 11, zero birdies.
Yeah.
From hole 11 on, he shot 4 over.
Yeah.
So, realistically, Bradley Williams had a putt on 14. Kyle Klein laid up on 18.
Yeah.
But he wasn't intentionally trying to throw. Would he throw OB twice on 18? He wasn't trying to throw OB twice on 18.
Yeah.
But he did lay up. But Bradley Williams, if he looks back at it, he can find points where he could have won this thing. It just didn't feel like that through 11 holes.
Right. Yeah. It didn't feel like that through 17 holes. Like,
no.
I mean, he never let it get close. It never got to the point where it was like, okay, now if we just get a 2-stroke swing, this thing's tied up. Like, he kept it far enough away that it always felt like people needed him to collapse. And obviously on 18, like, it just didn't matter at that point.
Yeah, he quote unquote did collapse,
right.
But he had built up way too many strokes for the collapse to matter. And that was kind of the story for a lot of players. Too late. Isaac Robinson, 10 under final round. Too little, too late. Lost by 4. Simon Lazat, 7 under final round. Same thing. Lost by 4. Calvin Heimberg, really good last 2 days. Bad first 2 days. Ended in 5th. Lost by 5. Ricky Wysocki ends his, what is it now, 8-year streak of top 10s. He came in 11th.
Yeah.
Egan McMahon was able to get into 9th. But all these players just came out flat.
Yeah.
Ricky fired off back-to-back 2-under par rounds, so he went 2-under, 4-under, and then he went 10-under to get to 14, and then 4-under. You just can't have those first two rounds be 2-under.
And it's like we said this at the beginning, but if you told every single player in the field to win this year, you just need to average 7-under, I think they all would have thought, they all would have approached their rounds differently. And that's just how it is every year. You are going to see guys go out, shoot that 10, 11-under. It'll happen from time to time, but that's not the kind of pace that wins this tournament. 7-under average would have won. That's what would have won the tournament, and that's not too crazy on the Pro Tour. It's not impossible to do out there, but it's just so difficult not to get demoralized. I mean, so many players. I talked to so many players who were like walking around after round 2 or 3 and just being like, yeah, I just kind of gave up. Like,
yeah.
It just like you get a round going, and then it just all blows up, and like all of a sudden you take back-to-back-to-back double bogeys, and you're like, well, what are we doing here?
Now,
like,
an important storyline. We might need to set a reminder for ourselves for next year's preview show.
Okay.
Isaac Robinson improved again on his finishing position. So he has improved every year
he's
played
out
here. He's now at 3rd, though.
Yeah.
So he has to come in 2nd or 1st next year.
That's true.
Just stats will tell us that.
I'm sure I'll still be believing in him after the
so
East Coast.
So we just have to remember that next year.
Since it's the East Coast Tour anyways, I think. Yeah.
When he gets back here, he will come in 2nd or 1st next year. He just keeps improving every year. So
yeah.
I just want to make sure we remember that for next year. But overall, an exciting week. It got boring during that final round. So I didn't actually watch it come in all the way. I watched it on coverage, but I was not going to try to get up in that mess up there by 18. And it would have kind of been electric. I don't know. Probably watch him throw would be the second time. People probably like, wait a second. Hold up. Bradley probably got out his calculator and was like, I'm in it. Here we go. But no, Kyle Klein did exactly what he needed to do out there. And you're right. If you had told players the winner's going to shoot 27 under this week, a lot of players, I think, would have felt way more confident about playing safer on some holes they were attacking. Because, I mean, we saw people doing some crazy stuff on hole 5, for instance, where you just... It feels like you're going to be out of it so early when it's like you're not.
Very hard to stay patient on that course. It really is.
Yeah, very great course, though. It showed its teeth yet again.
Without much
wind.
It
does it every year. The wind picked up a little bit in round three and four, but it never
got
crazy.
It was never like, oh, it's windy outside. No, it was just like a little breeze and some gusts.
Yeah, it was just enough to make players think. Yeah. But the course out there, say what you want about the Winthrop University design of this course.
It produces results.
It produces results every single time.
A lot of the players, man, they do hate it, though. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Let's talk briefly about the on-the-grounds experience. Why don't you, first off, Trevor, why don't you tell them about your sick rock?
Oh, do you want me to do that? You want me to do that on this podcast? I don't know, man. I'm allowed to?
You're allowed to.
All right. Here's a story. Here's a sad story I want to tell. So every year at USDGC.
That blood on me.
That bug that you killed.
Ah.
Every year at USDGC, they give out, at least Innova does, they give out. And who's behind that? Is it, it's Innova or is it Disc Golf United?
Probably Disc Golf United.
Okay.
Or US Disc Golf.
Whoever is behind the exclusive like Innova drops, they have a big tent and they do a new drop, something exclusive each day of the event. The first day we saw, the first day we saw a few Moondust molds with a pretty cool stamp. Honestly, probably the second coolest stamp of the tournament. Then the next day we saw some more Moondust plastic. The third day, like some glow. Well, the last day is when they're releasing the rocks, and this is pretty commonplace. Everybody knows they're going to. They do it at 12 p.m. every day. I really want one of these rocks. The last time I did this was 2 years ago, I believe. I don't know that I got one last year, but 2 years ago, and I remember just kind of walking in, not even thinking about when they were dropping or whatever, and just picking one out, and that was that. That was my experience 2 years ago doing this. And so, and in the previous days, they had leftover discs. Yes. They were even kept selling them throughout the week. There was leftover discs. So I get in line probably 15 to 20 minutes before noon, before the drop. Because like I had nothing really to do. I was like, well, I might as well get in this line so I don't have to wait a while. I'm not even thinking these things could sell out. I'm just thinking I don't want to wait super long. I'm just going to hop in this line. There can't be more than 40 or 50 people in front of me. I'm like, the line goes down the stairs of the tent and it goes probably another 20, 30 feet and that's where I am. I'm pretty new in this line. Well, it's 12 o'clock. We start walking our way up the stairs. And people are walking out of this tent with like 10 to 15 of these things at a time, stacks of them. I'm like, that's crazy. Like that just shows how much people want to flip these things. But I'm not really thinking about it because like I said, I'm like, I was so close to the front of the line. There's no way they're going to get run out. And like, there's no way they're going to let themselves run out. Like there's just free money behind me. This line goes way further behind me, way further. Keep walking through the line, just people, just stacks. Every single person that comes through, stacks of them. And I get to where there's probably five or six people in front of me. Hey, guys, sorry, we're all out. These are the last ones. If you want one, we're going to have a few on discgolfunited.com. And I was just mind blown. I mean, I was heartbroken. Number one, why are we selling any of them online? We all came and paid to go to this tournament to get these discs. They should all be here. Number two, what did you make, 200 of them? I understand the rarity thing, but you're not going to make any money off the guy selling them on eBay. You're not going to get like residuals off of that. So why did you just like waste money essentially? And number three, why on earth was there not a limit? Because of the percentage of people that wanted those rocks, 5% of them may have gotten one. I was devastated. There are people walking around with a stacks of 10 of these things. I literally walked out of there. I was so mad. I was angry. If somebody were to offer one of these rocks now, I would throw it in a creek.
Is it the Zuko rock? Is this it? Is this what you're going for?
No, it was way cooler than that.
What was the stamp?
It was. I'm trying so to find cool, it for you. It was one of these. It was like a metallic gray, and it had like a big bird on it. It was sick.
I don't even see any being flipped yet, man.
Yeah, well, in any case, probably because they're realizing they got something good. Look at the sold, maybe, and you might find some. But yeah, I mean, if somebody offered me one now, because somebody was like, I'm sure somebody would. I don't even want one anymore. I have a vendetta against whoever was behind this. I don't know why there wasn't a limit. You made a ton of people sad, and that was it was terrible. It's true. They just like there was a ton of people. There was a very small percentage of people that all got way more than they needed, and then there was I don't hate capitalism. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the people who had the opportunity to buy them that bought them. That is not the problem here. The problem is that there should have been a limit to limit that so that more people could get what they came for. It's not going to change your profits. And there should have been more made because they couldn't have made more than like 200-300 of them. So yeah, it was incredibly disappointing.
I wonder where these Gannon Burr ones are, man. Maybe after last year.
Yeah, that's like the last year champion ones.
Yeah.
I'm super frustrated with the whole thing.
I'm sorry for you.
So mad. Like it left. I was literally bitter for like hours later.
Yeah,
like,
I walked up to the tent not knowing what I was walking into.
Oh, I was so mad.
I just got the full story there.
I'm going to find one to show you because
there was a lot of good stuff that went on, and I'll tell you all of that. First off, it was our first time ever.
It was my only negative experience. Let me make that very clear. My only negative experience at this tournament was that, but it was a big one because I waited all freaking weekend for that disc, and now I don't want one anymore, so don't you dare try to send me one.
You can send me one. I'll gladly.
Disclaimer, if you send me one of those rocks in the mail, I'm going to blow it up.
If you send me one, I will put it on my wall and cherish it.
Make sure you address it to Hunter or else it's getting blown up.
And I think you're just trying to like bait people into sending you one because like if that was someone said I would send it.
I need to look on Facebook now. I need to find one.
This tournament gets better and better every year. Not even without a doubt the best disc golf experience you can go to in my opinion. We met so many people down there. We probably met some of you who are listening to this right now that told us that basically us talking about this event was the reason they came down there, which is awesome because I don't feel like we typically hype it up enough. So they were all very pleasantly surprised when they got there because the Vendor Village, I was explaining to my wife, because this is her second time coming down here, and the Vendor Village this year was considerably bigger than the Vendor Village last year. It was our first time vending down there. It went great. We were very excited to be there. We'll be excited to be back next year. And I was explaining to her, my first time ever was in 2015, and that house that's now where the live broadcast is in by hole one was the end of a pro shop, and you just had like a few racks of discs in there, and that was it. And then there was like a Clemson disc golf tent. There was, I think, an Eno tent or something else outside of that, and that was like all the vendors on site. No one was allowed to sell anything non-Innova up there back then. And then I remember we stayed at the Host Hotel, which was like 15 minutes away from the course, and some retailer had one of the conference rooms as like the spectator shop. And they had just like random stuff in there. So like you had to drive 15 minutes to get to more vending if you wanted to.
Can't even find this freaking
thing.
Did it ever exist?
That was basically it. Like that was the experience out there. I don't remember there being food trucks at all. There might have been one or two, but I don't remember there being food trucks.
When?
2015.
Oh, no. Even last year, I think there was probably two or three. This year, there was like 10.
Yeah.
The food situation rocked.
Yeah. This year, there's probably 50 vendors. You could find discs from every manufacturer. Discraft was there. Latitude was there. Castoplast was there. Millennium. Discraft was doing releases every day. Their line was like 300 people long. There's like that little spectator course to play. There was plenty of spots to sit and eat. You had food trucks from all over the like Charlotte area in there. There was live music every night. There was distance contests going on. They had a legend skins match, which was
that was sick too.
Ken Climo, Will Schustrick, Nate Sexton, and Barry Schultz. One of the biggest crowds out there all weekend was it that? There was so much to do. Like people were telling me it was their first disc golf event, and I was like, just lower your expectations before you go to another one because there's no one that does it like USDGC. And I firmly believe that they push the envelope every year. It was incredible. It was a great, great week. And hopefully next year y'all are able to join us if you weren't able to be there this year. It is well worth the trip, however long that trip may be.
I've joined like three different Innova collector groups and nobody's even posting this disc. Now I'm just like being made to look like a crazy person.
Yeah, I think you're crazy.
How is there an Innova rock collector group with 4,000 people in it?
I'm in there.
And you guys haven't, none of you guys are posting this thing. What are you trying to keep it under wraps? You're trying to hold it from me? Is that what this is?
They probably just hold them. They want to let them build value, man.
Like, is anybody tweeting it? Like, why am I meant to feel like a crazy person?
I don't think any of these rock collectors have Twitter.
No, Disc Golf United has a Twitter, though, don't they?
Yeah, I just went on their site. They're not on their site.
Yeah, I know they're on their site. Here it is. There's the stamp.
Very cool.
Very cool. And it says like 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
It's got the big bird on there.
Click the link to it. Click the link, man.
Loading error.
Probably could have
Throwback Moondust SJ Rock.
All right.
And it's not there anymore.
Throwback Moondust SJ Rock.
I mean, it's so cool, man. It was a bunch of sickos, man. And you end of a people, you know that the collector's market for y'all sucks right now. Like, you can go and buy any cool old Innova for like $30 a disc, okay? You know what? I just priced out because somebody had a brand new first run Rock there, and or Rock 3, I should say, which is like 10 years old, that it's very cool. Those things go for like $30 online. So why are we only making, it doesn't matter if you make a little or a lot. They got, you know what? This is the time lapse thing. It was a bad influence on them.
Maybe. Maybe. All right. Well, there's USDGC. Let's roll over while Trevor's still fired up into Trevor's trivia.
Okay.
What do you got for us this week?
Fine. All right. So, Kyle Klein wins a major. Pretty young guy, eh?
Yeah.
Not too many starts under his belt. So he is 1-for-11 now. He's 11 major starts, one win, puts him around 9%, which sits him right around tied for 12th on the all-time list in major win percentage.
That's crazy.
And that sits him right with Corey Ellis, I believe, is who shares that with him. So I want to see how well you can do at guessing the people with the best major wins percentage. This is obviously how many starts you have versus
MPO
how many wins
and
you have.
FPO?
This is just MPO.
And he's in 12th?
He sits,
just MPO?
He sits tied for 12th. Now, they haven't updated it, but I did the percentage math myself. Him and Corey Ellis are both 1-for-11, so I know they're tied.
There's that many ahead of them in MPO?
There's a couple that are like, they're like younger, more recent, and then there's obviously some legends. Let's see how many you can get of. So let me count out here. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people in front of Corey Ellis and Kyle Klein. Let's see if you can guess as many as possible.
Gannon Burr's got to be one of them.
Gannon Burr, 1-for-7. Well, he would now be 1-for-8. This is, let me just make clear, this is as of, this doesn't look appear that it's been updated after USDGC. But even 1-for-8, he would still be above the
Gannon Burr.
So yeah, he's at 11%. That's
his
percentage.
So people have won 10% of majors they showed up to.
Or not 11%. He's at 14%.
Okay. Paul McBeth's got to be one.
He's the number one.
Yeah.
He is at 34%.
Six. He hasn't played hundreds of majors.
He is 17-for-50.
Schuchert should be one.
Schuchert is, yes, 4-for-37.
You just got to pick people 10%. Who have multiple majors because they have to play so many.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ricky's got a few majors under his belt. Egan McMahon has a few. Ricky Wysocki, I feel like it's a good bet.
Ricky Wysocki is 5th. He is 6-for-38, coming in at 15%.
Ken Climo.
Climo is number 2. He's 18-for-55 at 32%.
Barry Schultz.
Barry Schultz is on that list. He's in the 10th spot. He's 5-for-50.
Yeah.
He has, be
getting closer.
Yeah, I say he does keep playing them.
Sitting
right there at 10%.
I feel like Avery Jenkins had a sneaky short career, but he won a few, like two majors in there. But did he play less than 20 majors? Is this only MPO majors?
This is MPO.
So if he snuck in like an Am World, it doesn't matter. Nate Doss.
Nate Doss, just outside.
Really?
He's 4-for-54.
He played 54 majors. Wow, yeah. I knew he had 4 wins. I just didn't think he would have played that many majors.
Just outside.
Holy crap, Nate. What were you doing?
That's a lot. More than Barry Schultz.
Yeah. How is that? That's not possible.
54 starts in majors.
More than Barry Schultz. Barry Schultz has played every USDGC that's happened. How old is Nate Doss?
Well, Nate Doss has probably played almost every USDGC. He was winning a world title in like 2003. That's only 4 in. So, I mean, he probably played almost all of them as well.
He's probably considered
because it's
that's what
Mando.
I'm saying. That's what I asked you before. If it was only MPO.
Oh. I thought you were talking about MPO versus FPO.
No, it probably
does consider junior.
Then that's a fake stat.
Let me look at his.
If it counts amateur.
Well, I would like to say that. I would like to say that almost all of the players in here, there's not one that like is skewed because of the junior ones. Well, like,
Nate Doss.
Obviously, they're skewed in some way, but not like. Let me look at where his first major on here that counts. Let's just to double check. It might not actually. No, it looks like all of his. It looks like Nate Doss only has one major that's listed as a junior.
And what about AMs?
Unless I need to scroll further or something. Yeah, let me see.
He'd have to play for so many years to get 54 majors.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as I'm scrolling through his profile, it doesn't look like it's 50. So that's why I'm confused. Like, are they not classifying some things as majors? Because, like, how many starts does he even have? He's played 309 events. Something's fishy is going on here. Something very fishy. It says player data from majors in the StatMando database that includes an MPO division with players who finished top 10 once. That's like everybody who's considered in here. And they have Nate Doss as having 54 starts.
I guess it's not impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you that I'm confused.
But like, he stopped
that.
Playing 6 years ago.
But then if you click on Nate Doss, let me
that's what he probably played majors for 15
let me
years.
Let me sort by tier.
And they didn't have four majors every year.
Right, I'm sorting by major, and it says 55 events. And then let me scroll down and see how many are. And then there's only one in here that's like a junior one.
That's wild.
I mean, like, is it counting it wrong? Like, I feel like I almost need to. That doesn't look like 50. It's not 50.
Can I see it?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. It might be 21, 22, 3, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 20. No, it's definitely 55.
Then when was Barry not playing majors?
I don't know. Did he have a hiatus?
Because how do they have the same?
But also, if you look at Doss, but if you look at Doss, he played every international major. Maybe Barry didn't really travel.
Maybe.
Let me look at.
Barry has 6 years of Doss on this end, and he had to have some years before him.
Yeah, I mean, let me sort Barry's majors. He's played. I mean, like, maybe he just didn't play the international ones. He played Japan Open a couple times, but other than the Japan Open, he never played outside of the U.S.
So I guess he's missing like one or two a year.
So I think that's probably what does it.
That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, StatMando, we put you under the grill there for a second.
No, it just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense.
Nate Doss has like some of the most confusing stats I think in all of disc golf. Whenever you look at his profiles, you're always like, huh?
Well, part of it is because you can't go to the PDGA to fact check it.
Hit him with it.
Because the PDGA. All right.
Well, you're still
gone.
Missing one. 2, 3, 4.
How am I missing
5?
So
you're missing
many.
5.
Did I guess Schuster?
Two of them you probably won't get. You did guess Schuster. There are a couple that are pretty difficult, but there are still some you're missing that you definitely could get.
Eagle McMahon could be sneaky because he got two major wins, and he'd have to have, what, 20? So you'd have to have 22 major starts to cover that, right? Yes. 22 majors, 22 divided by 4, 5 years. I mean, he easily could cover that. But he didn't play every major every year. He was hurt some. I'm not getting penalized for wrong answers, so Eagle McMahon.
No, he's just outside. Okay. He's 2 for 24.
That's close. I was close. There's got to be some guys that just like played a major, won it, and just never showed back up.
Well, you're missing one guy who has a lot of major wins.
Yeah, I know I am. I just can't think who it is. Feldberg?
There it is. Okay. 7 for 63.
I didn't know he had 7 major wins. I just knew he was going to have a lot of major starts.
7 for 63. Putting him at 11%.
So the other guy's the guy you think I won't
get? So there are two more guys on here that you definitely can get, and then there are two that you won't get.
Okay. I've knocked out Climo. I've knocked out Schultz. I've knocked out Paul. I've knocked out Ricky. I've knocked out Gannon.
Players are actually quite alike in your mind.
Schuster, I've knocked out.
You compare them all the time.
Oh, Chris Dickerson and Isaac Robinson?
Boom, boom. Isaac is 2 for 11, and Dickerson is 2 for 18.
That makes sense. Chris
doesn't
travel.
He doesn't travel.
Yeah.
The other ones were Jeff Watson, 1 for 6. But the other one, you know this player, Jesper Lundmark. He played back in the day. But yeah, 2 for 21. Very fascinating list, I thought. Because, yeah, Kyle has already jumped himself way up that list. Dave Feldberg and Avery Jenkins both have 63 starts in majors. They are like the top of this list of players who have finished top 10 once at a major. They are the highest.
At Nate Doss, that blew my mind.
Brinster's is probably the most epic on this list because he has 53 and just one win. Yeah. Like it took him like, USDGC. Yeah, that's epic. Greg Barsby is another cool one on there. 1 for 47.
That's tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting list to see like most starts with 0 wins.
At a major.
Like Philo's got to be way up there.
Yeah, I think we did that on the Immaculate Grid thing. And I think there were a couple that were like, I think Dave Dunipace is one of them.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cheater one, though, because he was still playing USDC like 3 years ago. Power rankings to wrap out the show. Right now we have Eagle 1, Calvin 2, Isaac 3, Gannon 4, Ricky 5, Matty 6, Simon 7, Cole Rodalyn 8, Proctor 9, Barella 10.
Is this our final power rankings, or are we going to do one after the Tour Championship, or is this it?
What do you think? I feel like this should probably be it because the Tour Championship, think, you have a stroke head start.
I agree. I think we lock him out.
I think we got to lock it in.
The final power rankings. Yeah. Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, let's start. Pressure.
Kyle Klein's got to get in there.
This is actually,
so let's just go Stat Mando here.
I'm really scared now.
And we got to go head to head. Kyle Klein versus AB. That's where we got to start.
Yep.
Get to this year and probably go. Please stop rubbing my foot with your foot.
Is that your foot?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Did we go since July?
What is it? Oh, I think we got to go a little more recent than that. These are August? Power rankings. Yeah, I think we got to go to August. Okay. These are power rankings.
Klein
after all.
Versus Barella. Compare. Klein's 4-2 against AB with a major win. So Anthony Barella out. Klein see versus Proctor.
How
Klein's 5-1 against
this
Proctor.
This is where we find out how much we've been sleeping on Kyle Klein.
Klein versus Cole Rodalyn.
He's probably gonna beat him too. He's gonna probably destroy Cole Rodalyn.
3-3. Closer, okay. Closer.
All right, we're finding the ceiling.
Klein versus Lazat.
This is how we know it's working, when we start finding the ceiling here.
3-3. Okay. We can't put him much higher, surely. Klein versus Matty O.
We can. Matty O just won.
3-3 against Matty O. But, dang, like, what is it looking like? You gotta look. Klein's definitely better than him.
You also got to look at when the three were. Because, like, if Matty O beat him in two out of the last three, like, there
it
is.
It was two of the last three.
That's what I'm saying. There is, like, an edge there.
But you go. Yeah, but Klein just won a major.
He did.
Okay, well, let's just go. Klein versus Ricky.
I'm okay with him jumping these guys that he's 3-3 against.
3-3 against Ricky too. Wow. Okay. I feel like we got to mess around with a lot of stuff.
Rick hasn't won in a long time.
No. Rick, why is Ricky this high? Maybe that's what we should be asking.
Well, he has good finishes.
Is it raining?
Yeah, it is supposed to rain. Dark horse.
Okay. Gannon Burr beats him. Okay. Kyle Klein won 5.
Yeah.
That was a snub. That was an all-time
I think he
snub.
Yeah, he was snubbed before. I feel like the
rain sounds so fake.
Yeah, we actually have fake rain.
That's what it sounds like. Okay.
All right.
We need to start looking at this bottom here. Because I feel like Matty O and Simon might have to jump Rick.
Potentially, yeah. We didn't do it after he won, so there must have been some reasoning for that.
They're 3-3 against each other. Matty O has a win.
Yeah,
Ricky is more consistent than Matty O.
I think that's what we ended up talking about last time, was like, this is power ranking, so this isn't just who's been hottest. It's like, who do we like going into the next event? Like, that's how powering should be, is like, who is the best player
right now? So let's look at the people ahead.
Like, I feel like the bottom over Matty O.
I feel like I like the bottom. I guess we got to go Proctor versus Barella really quick.
Yeah.
Since Barella got bumped. Yeah, Proctor's got him. Okay. So let's look at the top here. Finishing at USDGC, Eagle McMahon versus Calvin. Calvin beat Eagle by 3 strokes. So let's just go Calvin versus Eagle here on Stat Mando. McMahon. Eagle's 3-1 against Calvin.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both so good.
Eagle's been.
But
on
Eagle
fire.
Went 2-3-2-9 like, since yeah. August. Heimberg's went 5-5-4-5.
I don't mind Eagle at the top of the power rankings, because I feel like if there were one more event that wasn't like that was normal, I'd be thinking like Eagle could be the favorite.
Okay, let's go Heimberg versus Isaac then.
This is going to be where it gets interesting.
Heimberg's 4-2 against him. Yeah, clearly the better player. Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Robinson versus Burr.
Yeah, I was saying, this game, Calvin will almost lose to nobody.
Robinson versus Burr. Isaac has him 4-2. Clearly the better player. And then we just did Burr versus Kyle Klein.
We got a pretty sound list.
I think this is pretty good.
Yeah, because nobody really did anything too stupid at USDGC.
Yeah, okay. So Eagle won. Gannon kind of sucked at USDGC a little bit.
We do need to do...
But I think we're okay here.
We do need to do a double check on like the UDisc rankings, just to make sure there's not anybody being snubbed for the last power rankings. Just to be sure.
It's a good call.
Let's see here. See if there's anybody that we're leaving out. Rankings. Okay. Paul and Beth, obviously not. Bradley Williams, somebody who just jumped a lot. Now, he did just jump 13 spots, so I don't think that's going to matter.
Let's go Bradley Williams versus the proctologist here.
Shouldn't be close.
Bradley Williams 4-2 against him.
Here we go. This is why we do this.
The better player, but not by much.
Okay.
So let's just go Bradley Williams to Cole Rodolin, and I think that's probably as far as this thing will go. Yeah, Cole smacks him.
Okay.
Then so Bradley gets into 10th. So
now let's try. There's a couple other players I'm going to try. Aaron Gossage and then Chris Dickerson. Those are the other two that I want to throw into the mix. Okay,
Bradley Williams versus Gooseman himself. Gets him.
Beats him.
And then Dickerson.
Dickerson.
Never thought I'd have his name coming up.
Aha! Beats him. See?
Okay, we have Chris, clearly the better player there, right? Chris versus Rodolin then. Yeah, okay, so Chris Dickerson, welcome to the top 10. Good for you. With the start of the season, I did not think Chris Dickerson had a chance at the top 10.
He just kind of been hanging around lately. I think we can leave it there.
I think we're happy here. So, end of season, grip lock power rankings, Ingwik Man 1, Calvin Heimberg 2, Isaac Robinson 3, Gannon Burr 4, Kyle Klein 5, Ricky Wysocki 6, Matty O 7, Simon Lizotte 8, Cole Rodolin 9, Chris Dickerson 10.
We're going to have to, maybe we'll do like a little reminisce of the season when we do the grippies, but like look at our first power rankings and our last ones to see. Like, I think obviously big shockers on that list would have been
Isaac Robinson.
Isaac Robinson that high.
He might have been close to the bottom
of
the top 10.
But I would say Cole Rodolin being in the top 10 would have probably been the biggest shock of that list. And Paul McBeth being not on that list would have probably been another big shock.
One thing I forgot to mention, I just was thinking of it because Kyle Klein won. It ended up not mattering, but Paul Ulibarri popped by the tent at some point around day two, day three. And we were talking to him and we were saying something about like the leaderboard or whatever. And I forget, there was a player who was in the mix that was not qualified for the tour championship yet. And Yuli was just saying how he's like, all I care is that player doesn't win. I forget who it was because he was saying it was a weird one where like, he was in the tour championship because the USDGC doesn't count towards points. But he was like, but it says major and pro tour winners are exempt. He's like, so I think even though I'm in and this doesn't matter points wise, he's like, if this player wins, I think I get bumped.
And you don't remember who it was?
I don't remember who it was. But
Sullivan Tipton.
Oh, Sullivan. Yeah, so
it has
to
be him. Yeah.
It was Sullivan. He was like, because if he wins, I think he takes my spot at the Pro Tour Championship.
Dude, yeah.
He also described his round, because we were like, way to hold it together out there, because like he was having an up and down round, and he described his round. He's like, literally, dude, this is what it felt like. I was just running with three friends through a minefield, and he's like, and as I was running, I was just watching one buddy blow up and go away, and I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, and then I take a few more steps, play a few more holes, and another buddy's boom. He's like, oh, there goes a 10. Oh, there goes a 9. He's like, and I was just waiting. Where's my mine? When am I about to step on mine?
Oh my gosh.
He's like, I was just
funny,
sprinting
dude.
Through that round. Just my heart rate was up. Because I just was watching people just blow up left and right.
That's
left
like the
right
best way to
my
describe
time.
That.
Yeah,
that's,
I was like,
funny.
That was very funny.
I love it.
All right, FPO to round it out. Kristen Tatar 1.
Staying.
She's
got to
stay
obviously.
There. Owen Scoggins 2.
She was like top 10 maybe.
I think
but she
did okay there.
But yeah, like we got to look at Holland for sure because even if Holland is close to other people.
Where's Owen at? Owen was finishing 13th. Let's just start with Holland versus Owen.
Yeah.
Just to see
just
to
be ethical,
that,
man.
Just to be ethical. Yeah. Holland should definitely jump
Big
Missy, I believe.
Ethics guys here.
We did this August on.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll go Handley versus Scoggins.
For sure.
And Owen Scoggins 5-1 against her.
Yeah.
All right, then first Holland stuff. Handley versus Missy Gannon. 3-3-1.
So I think we give Holland the bump.
Yeah, because we have Missy Gannon 1 back
a
at
long
Ledgestone.
Time ago.
And then Holland just won, and they both haven't finished outside the top 15, but Gannon has the worst of the two. So, yeah, so Holland jumps Missy Gannon here. Sorry, messed that up. Command X. Boop, boop, beep, boop, beep. Deep, boop. Nice. And then Missy Gannon versus Haley King. Should have done that last week, so this shouldn't do any crazy results. Missy Gannon beats her. Is there anyone we feel like we're missing in the top five there?
I mean, the only two that just would be, that would make sense would be like, no, definitely not Val.
I was just checking.
Like Evelina and
Henna, I feel like
enough.
Has had a decent. Yeah, Henna's 3-1 against Haley since August.
But like, what have those events been? Have they been recent enough?
Worlds, Henna Beater, MVP Open, Haley Beater with the win, and then U.S. Women's Henna Beater and Throw
but
Pink
but it's
Henna
like
Beater.
3-4 and like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I see any merit in
well,
that.
Well, the big thing is Haley King won the MVP Open. Henna does not have a win there.
Yeah.
And then I think Henna's been having a better season than Evelina, so I don't think this is going to... Yeah.
Just nothing.
I think it goes to Haley King. I think the win matters a little bit more
I'm
in
that
situation.
That. I'm fine with
all right, so the final grip lock power rankings for FPO. We have Kristen Tatar 1, Owen Scoggins 2, Holland Handley 3, Missy Gannon 4, and Haley King 5. And there it is. That wraps up the power rankings. That's the end of the year, regular season for the Disc Golf Pro Tour.
We've
and
got
now
one more week
we've
of
got
disc golf.
Just the tour championships, and then it's off-season disc golf.
I'm
off-season
scared.
Off-season grip lock.
I'm very scared.
Every time we get to off-season, we're like, how are we possibly going to make an hour-long podcast every week? And yet, it's easier than you think.
Free agency, baby.
Free agency should start getting interesting.
Be kicking up this
quick.
Year.
Quick. Discmania's free agency hands just got tied a little more because Kyle Klein's value just went up.
Big time.
So if they were actually trying to get Gannon Burr this off-season, they got another superstar on their roster now. They got to deal with Kyle Klein, Eagle McMahon, and trying to get Gannon if that's on their mind.
That would be
so,
a crazy roster. A
lot of stuff to think through this offseason, so you're not going to miss out. But we'll be back next week, I guess, to talk about the Tour Championship yep. and wrap up the season, put a little bow on the entire season.
Yeah.
We'll see you then.